Matter with Jenny and Mark Steele on Bow Radio.
It is indeed a wee natter. I'm Mark Steele, and across the table should be, well, somebody else. But unfortunately, for super secret reasons that you and I, dear listener, don't have clearance to know about, Jenny's not available tonight. So it's just me, and it's just you, dear listener, as well. But I'm sure we'll get along like a house on fire. Why did I say that? A house on fire is not a good thing. But I'm sure we'll make a good thing of it either way. And I'm joining you on a week that we got a little dusting of the white stuff here in Sherwood, which is, it always makes it magical when there's a bit of snow on the ground. Until it's a bit later, it turns to slush and it looks all horrible and muddy. But it does make it a little bit magical, especially if you get it in moonlight. And you go through the dark, and you're in the forest and things like that. It's just lit up by the moonlight. It is quite a magical experience. If you've never done it, go do it. And I must say, having that bit of snow out there really took the edge off when my boss called me to saying, to save a bit of money, you don't have any job anymore, Mark. So if you, dear listener, are looking for somebody with leadership and tech experience, do give me a bell. But in more positive news, the postbag has arrived. And last week we were asking, what uncool thing are you good at? Because there was this kid who's absolutely brilliant at Tetris. That you know, the ancient video game that everyone's had a go at some point in their life. He was so brilliant at it, he got to the end of the game, the bit where they're going, we weren't expecting anyone to get this far, and the green broke. So we were asking about the things that are uncool, but you're rather good at, and a few of you have been in touch. Hank saying, I'm very good at throwing snowballs to my wife, and she doesn't like it. Funny that. Nobody's a big fan of getting snowballs thrown at them. I remember at school, they used to take it a bit further and really became quite evil with it. Used to get kids that would put rocks inside the snowballs and throw them at you. Yeah, I used to be on the receiving end of that. Can you tell I wasn't very popular at school? And yes, Hank, you are right. It is weird. Ladies like to have the attention, all that. I guess that's a question I ask myself. Is, you know, why do people want the attention? Then you give them attention, they don't like it. And also, what are you doing wrong, is the other thing Hank asks. I ask that question myself all the time. Also, being in touch, Sam Killip saying, I'm not sure whether I say it's uncool or not. So we're going to have to make a judgment here, dear listener. Is what Sam does cool or not? He writes blogs, and people have said he's very good at it. So he sent us a link to his blog, and it's all about ice skating. And I'll be honest with you, my knowledge of ice skating ends at the Bolero. And you can't live in Nottingham not know about the Bolero. But anyway, I've had a look, and it seemed to make a lot of sense to me. So I guess you're quite good at it, Sam. Whether it's cool or not, I'm the wrong person to be asking that question. Catherine Farquhar also saying, embarrassing my kids, much to the amusement of the grandkids. It's kind of funny. When you're young, you're trying to be all cool and things like that, aren't you? And then as you get older, you realise nobody really cares. You can have a bit of fun with it, except for kids. And there's some weird perverse joy you get out of being uncool in front of kids. It's fantastic, isn't it? I'm on board with you there, Catherine. Also, to Sandra O'Gorman saying, I'm excellent at untangling jewellery and chains and won't stop till it's unknotted. Not a cool thing to do, though. Very useful, I must say. Any time I've dealt with a chain, it's always been because somebody's given it to me and it's in a scrunched up mess and they need to unpick it. I'm no good at it. That is surprisingly hard to deal with. So well done to you, Sandra. Louise Mallison saying, I have to say, it's cleaning the bathroom. That used to be something I was very good at. But I've kind of got out of practice, and I probably got to get on top of that. And then the missus will kill me for not doing that. Sally Ann Markham Johnson saying, gardening for herself or opening doors for the cat. Oh, what is it with cats? If you don't have a cat, you will not go on through this. But if you do have a cat, you know exactly what I'm on about, where they'll scratch at the door saying, I want to get out. You'll open the door, and they have zero interest in stepping outside the door. But you close that door to keep the heat in the house, and they want to go out. So you let them out, and then give it about 30 seconds, and they want to come back in again. You want to put a cat flap in, but it's a bit messy. Cheryl Martin saying, keeping the kitchen bench clean and tidy because nobody else in this household does. That doesn't sound like something that you're good at, but it's uncool. That sounds like a message to the other people that live in your house to say, by the way, you ought to be cleaning this up as well. Get on to it. And they're using me as the vessel for that to make it sound a bit better. And finally, Vicky Fairweather saying, for me, it would probably be Latin translation, which I guess only a fairly small proportion of people would consider cool. I've loved it since I started at school, age 12, and I'm quite good at it now. That's one of these things that can, I hate to say this, date you, because up to a certain point, almost everyone got exposed to Latin at school. And then after a certain point, no, Latin just didn't come up at all. It was never a thing. The only Latin I've ever known the translation for was a posse ad esse, which was the slogan for the air cadet squadron I was in. You know, from possibility to reality was a translation. Whether that's accurate or not, I have no idea. And on that note, let's have a wee natter. There is something good about giving gifts, isn't there? hoping that the recipient will love what you're handing over. Or there's a, you know, that bit of jeopardy when you're handing the gift over. You're hoping they love it. They might not love it, and you're going to find out the hard way in a moment, and maybe you make a misjudgment, you know. A great example of that, you see an ad for what I call facial polyfiller. That's your Olay and things like that, you know, the facial creams that are supposed to make your skin look younger and all that sort of thing. You get it for a partner, man or woman. They do men's versions nowadays, without being hinted to. So you've gone out, you've bought this thing, you haven't been hinted to that they are after this, because it's quite an expensive gift, and a lot of people would love to get it. But if they haven't hinted to it, you'll be lucky to survive the night, won't you? Don't ask me how I know. And it's not only partners you have to deal with gifts with, and it can be a bit of jeopardy in there as well. I've got my nephews for Christmas, a little computer thing, a Raspberry Pi, that I managed to find at a cracking price, and I give them a book, you know, learn how to make your own video games, you know, get them into that sort of stuff. Do you know how it went down? Yeah, they completely ignored it and decided to play checkers for the rest of the night instead. But they're not the only ones to screw me over like that. We got the cat a new gift, got a cat at home, got it. It sounds overkill when I say this, a water fountain. Which makes it sound like I've got this big grand thing in my garden. It's only a couple inches by a couple inches. But the idea is that cats don't like to drink stagnant water. So you put it in a bowl, they don't like to drink it. They prefer to drink out of that dripping tap that I was supposed to fix 10 years ago. That's what cats prefer. So the idea is you get them this little thing and it's constantly streaming water and they can drink it when they want. She hasn't even touched it once. She's more interested in drinking from that tap I haven't fixed yet. So I'm going to open this up to you, dear listener. What gifts have you given or received that were not appreciated? I would love to hear about it. Is a wee natter on Bow Radio. I'm Mark Steele on my Todd. Keeping you company for this evening. It is a Sunday evening. And we're asking about the gifts that you have given or received that were not appreciated. And Jenny has been in touch saying, my coat hanger, there was supposed to be a wine glass holder that you clipped to the side of the bath. One, I only had a shower at the time. And two, I hate wine. How can you possibly hate wine? I guess you could be an absinthe person, couldn't you? Oh, that's always a possibility. Or maybe, you know, special brews more your kind of thing. She'll say, don't get me started on some plastic thing that you pop into a drink to make it fizzy. I'm with you there, Jenny, as well. So we want to hear from you, dear listener, any of those sort of gifts where, quite frankly, when you're unwrapping them, it's kind of like when you were a kid, and you're unwrapping them, and you see there's a pair of socks. And you still have to be grateful. Or maybe you're that person that took a time to pick out the perfect pair of socks. You wrapped it up, you handed it over, and they opened it and were disappointed. We want to hear about it. Vicky Fairweather has been in touch saying, hi Mark, I'm enjoying the show tonight. See, it's not only Steve Wright that gets these lovely show messages. I'm glad you're enjoying it there, Vicky. The most recent unwanted gift I've received was a bottle of champagne from a client before Christmas. I hate alcohol. Oh, that's the funny thing. If you're going to give alcohol, you've got to know the person definitely drinks. And that they definitely like that drink. Because the last thing you want to do is give them, like, I don't know, a bottle of port. And they can't stand this stuff. Or they don't drink at all. But in Vicky's case, she's saying, I donated it to a village hall raffle where it was well received and made some money for a good cause. I would far rather just have had the value as a tip. I'm with you on that one as well, Vicky. And on the topic of unpopular gifts, because that's what we're looking at, was the gifts that you give them or you receive them and it doesn't go down well because it was a bad gift. Well, I found a list that somebody's put together of the top 10 most unpopular presents. And of course, because this is radio, we are obliged you can't do a countdown without the Pick of the Pots theme. Number 10, Potpourri. I think that depends on the person. Some people love it. I don't think I'd be too happy about getting it. Number 9, hankies. I suppose as long as they're not used, it's not a bad gift. In at number 8 is soap on a string. Soap on a rope. Is that even still a thing? Number 7, new windscreen wipers. That's very clinical. That's the sort of thing you only ever gift if somebody asks for it. Number 6 is a tie. And 5, cleaning products. Seriously, if somebody gave me bleach for Christmas, I'd be having words with them. Number 4 is a de-icer. Number 3 is a car manual. Number 2, bad romance novels. And what do you think came top of the list for gifts, whether it's Christmas, whether it's a birthday or whatever, that is most unpopular? It's not a physical gift, but if you got it, you still wouldn't be happy. It is, of course, a diet plan. Talk about sending a message. I've got a bit of a dilemma to solve, dear listener, and I'm looking for your help, mainly so I don't act like a complete weirdo in this situation, right? I'll admit there's a baseline level of weirdness that's built into me that you'll never be able to resolve, but I'd like not to extend that further. So the situation is, there is the humble lollipop lady or man, right? You know what they're there for. They're there to help children cross the street. And they have that bit of chalk in their pocket as well, ready to note down the number plate of drivers that, frankly, if you missed a lollipop person, I'm surprised you're not driving with your white stick out the window trying to find out where the curb is by feel. But the lollipop person, they're there to help little kids cross the road. As an adult who's looking to cross that same road, should you wait for the lollipop person to help you or not? On one hand, it feels a bit weird and daft to be there as a fully grown adult going, I'm not going to cross the road until this other fully grown adult steps out and stops the traffic for me. It feels a bit weird. It feels a bit wrong. On the other hand, there's kids about. You don't want to set a bad example. You want to show the kids this is the correct way of doing things. And the other, to be quite frank, bigger problem I've got with this one is I don't want to be told off in the middle of the street by a lollipop person. That would be proper embarrassing. So, do you accept the assistance of the lollipop person, or do you walk an extra half mile down the road to avoid the situation? Answers on a postcard, genuinely, because I have absolutely no idea, dear listener. About you, dear listener, because I am not you, but I do love a good walk in the mountains. There's this thing called Bagging Munros north of the border up in Scotland, where mountains over a certain height, the idea is that you're supposed to walk up them, climb up them, and you can tick them off on your list. And there is a set number of them, and you can bag the Munros as you're going along. And I've done a few of them. I'll admit, mainly easy ones. I'm not sitting there, you know, looking at Ben Wevis in winter going, yeah, I'd love to be up there. I look at Ben Nevis in winter and go, yeah, no, I'll stay here with the central heating. And, bigger stuff like K2 and Everest, they sound cool until you start thinking about the fact it takes months to get up there. And there's not even a coffee shop at the top. You know, Snowdon has a coffee shop at the top. K2 and Everest don't. It's outrageous. You'd have thought somewhere that famous would have facilities like that. Honestly. But it turns out, right, I've been reading in the news recently, it turns out they've been having bigger problems than that on Everest. I'd have thought the fact they don't have a coffee shop was the biggest problem, but they do have a bigger problem than that. It turns out it's starting to whiff a bit. Seriously, as in you know how there's that concept of you go into the mountains, you go, and you sniff the mountain air. Apparently, if you do that in Everest, you get a bit of a whiff with all the climbers being, you know, going up and down there over the years and having absolutely no facilities. So authorities are demanding that climbers bring your deposits back down with you. You know, I guess like in doggy bags. You know, literally, if you take the dog for a walk, you have to take a bag, a bit like that in Everest. You know, you're walking up there, you have to get a bag out of the roll, you have to go pick it up and you bring it with you. And if it's anything like dog droppings, and, you know, this is my experience, if it's anything like dog droppings, these droppings on Everest will be hanging from trees, they'll be kicked under rocks, they'll be just left curled at the top as a monument to being, well, quite frankly, I can't put it under any other way than being a tit. And on that note, I should have asked earlier, you're not having your tea at the moment, are you? And in case you haven't realised, dear listener, Pancake Day is coming. It is coming on Tuesday this week. Consider this your warning. You haven't been alert already. And one of the things that my missus likes to do, Jenny likes to do, is she thinks I don't notice this, but she buys pancakes, right? And then she'll cook them on the frying pan, heat them up, and then put them on a plate and say, oh, well, look, I've managed to create pancakes. Yeah, I've done them all from scratch. I'm amazing, haven't I? Like I haven't noticed the Bessie's or the Tesco or whatever wrapper that's been in the fridge for the last couple of days. Like I'm blind. Like I haven't going to notice these sort of things. Although I must admit, when it comes to pancakes, when it comes to toppings, I like it plain. Just a bit of sugar on it. That's all I need. What's your favourite topping? I guess we could turn that into a topic, couldn't we? Be honest with you, dear listener, when I just asked you about, you know, toppings for your pancakes, I didn't think it'll be honestly turn into such a big topic, but weirdly, it definitely has. And a few of you have been in touch. Daniela Ferry saying she likes pancakes that are made from scratch with fresher frozen berries, then drizzle maple or blueberry syrup on top. Oh, I'm not a big fan of berries, I'll be honest with you. I could go either way on berries, but when I hear about that drizzle on top, you're spot on there, Daniela. Vicky also in touch saying, Pancake Day, I've forgotten I was going to pop out for flour. We've only got self-raising at the moment. I guess you could have quite inflated pancakes, couldn't you? They could be quite big and quite inflated. And I need to get plain flour for pancakes. I'll see if I can get some ready mix to cheat as well. Because, yes, Jenny cheats from ready mix if she is going to make it from scratch. I'm no good at it. I just get them out of packet. I'm not going to take shots at anyone for how they make pancakes, dear listener. All she asks for is lemon juice, Vicky. Nancy also in touch saying that I like pancakes with fresh blueberries with maple syrup. Oh, and apparently her husband usually cooks them from a dry mix that he adds water to. I guess that's sort of the halfway house between making them from scratch and just getting them out of the packet. I guess you could sort of live with that one, couldn't you? Teresa also in touch saying all she asks for is sugar and lemon juice on hers. I'm on board with that one. I could go either way on the lemon juice. I never got the whole thing about lemon and pancakes, but a little bit of sugar. Spot on. Sonia Derbyshire, I've always forget it's Pancake Day, but then I'm not very keen on pancakes. I figured it'd have to be a small one, filled with pineapple and ginger honey or Marmite peanut butter. That's almost down the sort of crepe route, isn't it? You know, there's sort of very fancy, very thin French-style pancakes that you put all the toppings in, and they're almost like a meal. They're not quite at the level of a burrito where you bite into them and all the filling pops out and it feels like you've had a food baby afterwards. But there's sort of that nice little balance when you want it a bit more than just a pancake. June Arnold's saying she makes her own pancakes because she's old and traditional. I wouldn't word it that way, June. And she likes them with just sugar and lemon juice. There's a lot of votes for sugar and lemon juice. Maureen Stott. Saying, I love pancakes, sugar and lemon juice. Trouble is, I can eat them as fast as I can make them. I'm very bad and greedy. That's another problem I have. You have a pack of pancakes. It's never one or two. It's closer to like 8 or 10 in a pack. And I can't just leave half the pack. I will consume them. It's like if you buy a box of biscuits. They are all going to disappear in one go. It's just how it goes down. Sam Killip also saying lemon and sugar for him. If I did have savoury ones, it'd be chicken and lemon with herb and peri-peri sauce. That's almost the sort of thing you get from a Chinese restaurant, that one, isn't it? And Louise Mallinson saying, I make my own pancakes. Favourite filling is sugar and vinegar. I'm sorry, vinegar on on chips. Fine, I understand where you're coming from. On pancakes, we need to have a word about that. I've never been in a pancake race. What is a pancake race? I've never heard of it before. Paul Elsie also in touch saying, my favourite pancake toppings are lemon and sugar or sliced fruits drizzled slightly, warmed Nutella spread. It's all sweet stuff. It's all amazing stuff. And I must admit, I'm still getting over the fact that one of the biggest topics we've ever talked about was what you put on your pancakes for Pancake Day. Because, in case you haven't noticed, dear listener, Pancake Day is next week. Tuesday is Pancake Day, in case you just need a little jogging of the memory. And another thing that you might need your memory jogged about is the fact that this year is an election year, assuming certain people in charge of these things don't bottle it. We are going to have a general election, and you will hear all sorts of promises in the build-up, but no one, absolutely no one, will be dealing with the unimportant issues. And we want to change that. We want to bring the
heart to the people!
I always have to say I'm not communist after saying that one, but there we go. It's all part of something we call yes, it is Alexis. And weirdly, for this week, we're going to be tackling a local issue, which, you know, dear listener, means I have to play the clip. It is genuinely an issue that exists here in Sherwoodlands. So if you've kept your beady eye on the news, dear listener, you'll know that Notts County Council are having a consultation about something called Rufford Ford, which, even if you don't live in Sherwood, that name will ring a bell or two because it's famous all over the internet. If you stick it into YouTube, you stick it into, what do you watch videos on, TikTok and Instagram, any of these things, you will find videos of people that go racing into the Ford on their car, make a big splash. The engine goes, tuk, 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 tsh. The car stops working, and everyone goes, way, like they've dropped a dish in a restaurant or something like that. And it's all because this Ford has a fantastic viewing area. You could stand next to it, and until very recently, you could watch the car splashing in the Ford when there was a bit of water there. And as you imagine, this sort of thing attracts a certain kind of person. You know, the sort of person that likes to show off, you know. Yeah, they like a bit of attention. That's the sort of thing that's the sort of person it brings. So the county council, after a few incidents, have temporarily closed it. And as part of keeping out, they're having a consultation at the moment, and they want to permanently close it. Personally, I think it's a cop-out. You know, they're claiming there's no money to put a bridge in. So I have a solution that is going to be part of the People's Manifesto, dear listener. It's going to be part of our manifesto we're building for the unimportant issues of the day. I think the solution is that we build some ski ramps. And it's the same solution I've got for Allerton Roundabout. Let's not spend millions of pounds. Let's put some ski ramps in, right? And you're going to get Doris in her Suzuki Swift coming along. She's coming towards, whether it's the Ford or Allerton Roundabout, hits the ski ramp and boosh! It's a Suzuki Swift. It's in the name. It's supposed to be able to fly. And all you have to do is you've got a little viewing area. You get people jumping off the ski ramps, charge them a couple of quid to watch it, and you'll have enough money to build a bridge in a day or two. And we were talking about the way to solve the problem with Rufford Ford was to install ski ramps, get those Doris and her little Suzuki Swift to fly, because Swifts fly, and you'll get so much money out of that show that you'll be able to pay for a bridge in no time. That's the suggestion I'm making to the county council. Talking about suggestions, Hank has been in touch saying, hello, Jenny and Mark. Unfortunately, Hank, I'm on my own this week. Jenny is, well, she's doing something that she's not allowed to even tell me about. It's all very hush-hush, very, very secret. He's saying, I hope everything is okay with you both. I've been driving from my cabin. I went skiing in the mountains because there has fallen on Thursday and Friday 60 centimetres of snow. Wow, I'm guessing you're not in Sherwood there, Hank. We had a little bit of snow. We didn't have 60 centimetres of this stuff. But he's saying, so it's nice to go skiing on this fresh snow on Saturday and Sunday. I hope you both had a nice weekend. We did. It was lovely in the sun and the snow. I seen moose, snow foxes, and a lot of birds. I don't think I've ever seen a moose in my life. I've been to zoos, never seen one in my life. He's asking, can you play a request for me? Because everything went all right. He's asking for All Right by Santana. So we have been delving into the archives. I had to go into the basement to find this one. Seriously, it's proper spooky. There's no lights, it's flooded, and there's a bloke that lives down there that probably shouldn't be living down there. But anyway, I had a nice chat with him. He managed to help me find the record. It's a wee natter on Bow Radio, where it is the return of our 100 question quiz. The quiz I wrote over a decade ago, so a lot of the answers will be outdated now, but we are working our way through it, and, well, it's a chance for us just have a little bit of fun. I'd love to offer you a prize, but I've been booted out of my job this week. Not because I'm bad at it. They just run out of money, which means I've run out of money. So we haven't got any prizes at the moment. So we're just doing this purely for fun. So this week's question, which aircraft was most effective in helping win the Battle of Britain? Yeah, going all the way back to World War II. Which aircraft was most effective in helping win the Battle of Britain? If you think you know, get in touch. Is a wee Nasser on Bo Radio. We were asking that tough little question, what aircraft was most effective in helping win the Battle of Britain? It's a tough nut to crack that one. What I can say is Cheryl Warner, you're right. But have you figured out the answer, dear listener? We'll find out in just a moment. So we and Arthur on Bo Radio, where we're asking which aircraft was the most effective in helping win the Battle of Britain. A few of you have been in touch. Hank saying the Supermarine Spitfire. Also on that train is Stephen Ray saying R.G. Mitchell developed it because he went to Germany and saw what a threat the Nazis posed to Britain. I feel like this is going to be one of these controversial answers when I give it, but the answer that I've got in front of me, dear listener, is the Hawker Hurricane rather than the Spitfire. Because while the Spitfire was the most famous aircraft, it's the one everyone thinks of, and when you see it flying overhead, which I've done a number of times, you know, the guy, the Battle of Britain Memorial flight going out and about, you see them flying over this part of the world from time to time, it's fantastic, but the Hurricane was used in much larger numbers and did more of the work. That's the argument. It's admittedly a bit of a controversial answer, but that's one we're going for. Hopefully, you managed to get it right. And on a slightly different note, we've also had Stephen West in touch saying, my wife Paula has had a complex operation in the hospital and she's at home in lots of pain in bed. I'm sorry to hear that. Can you please give her a shout? Yes, we're giving you a shout out, Paula, and we're going to send you some love as well. And on that note, I think we'll play a nice upbeat wee tune for you. On behalf of your husband, Bear, we'll go with Alicia's Attics, I Am, I Feel. It's a wee natter on Bo Radio. Now that we're on to February, I do have to ask, how are your New Year's resolutions coming along? Be honest, can you even remember them? Personally, I was aiming for a weight loss. Currently, it's a gain, so I do have to face up to this. Hey, fatty boom boom. Yeah, I should be offended, but it's totally fair. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because Finnair are experimenting with weighing passengers. It's all anonymous and voluntary at the moment, but imagine you're all set for your days of a full English fry-ups and fighting the Germans for sun loungers. You walk up to check in and they eye you up and go, yeah, you look a bit on the chunky side, sir. That's the sort of story that ends in one of two possible outcomes. One, you pay more money for your beer belly. Or two, your family has to go on different flights so the plane can take off. I admit, I'm not keeping up with my New Year's resolution to lose weight. A couple of you have been in touch. Hank saying he's managed to get out of the cabin four times. He's just showing off his New Year's resolution. And we've also had Stephen saying he's managed to do a lot better losing weight, joining the triathlon group. And I'm just sitting there thinking, I struggle with one sport, never mind three. And on that note, that's about it for a wee natter. Thanks for joining us.